is Rosalyn Stone. I'm the CEO of Zero Hour Health, and welcome to the Zero Half Hour. With me today is Lorraine Martin, CEO of the National Safety Council. Lorraine assumed that role about 5 years ago, and prior to that, held various positions with Lockheed Martin for 29 years. Welcome, Lorraine. First, can you tell us a little bit about the NSC and what it is you all do?
Thank you, Rosalyn. Our mission is very simple, to save lives from the workplace to any place. It's easy to say and very complex in today's world. The National Safety Council is America's leading nonprofit safety advocate, and we've been having that role and mission for about 110 years. And as a mission-based organization, our focus is eliminating leading causes, and they change over time, of preventable death and injury in our country and for those in our workplaces and on our roadways. We have about 13,000 member companies and federal agencies, which covers about 41,000 work sites across our country and in some cases multinational. And you've probably heard about some of our work, but maybe not. Back in 1962, we led the education campaign about wearing seat belts. If you can imagine just that bit ago, we had to convince folks that it was an important thing for their safety. We also advocated for OSHA before there was a government agency that looked at worker safety. And then most recently, things like click it or ticket on airbags and seatbelts, those were really spearheaded by the National Safety Council. So we look at the data and we let it take us where we need to go to make sure we can keep people safe at work and on our roads.
Well, I did not know 110 years or 41,000 work sites, so that's really impressive. So we're here today to talk about a couple of things in particular. Many of our listeners know your organization's work on road safety and on safety in general, but why is your team focusing now on opioid overdose reversal drugs like naloxone, aka Narcan?
That's a great question, and thank you for asking that. And I bet a lot of folks might ask, you know, why is the National Safety Council looking at that issue? In fact, we have actually been looking at this issue from about 2012. Our job is to keep people safe at work, on the roads, and everywhere in between. And the data started to tell us that someone having a risk of having an unintended overdose was starting to eclipse other risks that we have in our lives. And as we follow the data, it became increasingly clear that this was a major public health crisis and in some sense, a safety emergency for everyone in our country and for the workplaces that we served. This really has hit mainstream. And I know I talked to a lot of folks, and today I would say there's very few people that I talk to that haven't had some interaction with a community that's had an overdose, perhaps a family member, somebody at work, or even just in some of our current media and watching books and movies and whatnot. It is something that we are dealing with head on in many cases. And in other cases, it's something that's kind of out there as part of our day-to-day life, which is just so unfortunate. But the rise of opioids and most recently fentanyl in our communities has really caused this to spike. We have literally 200 people a day, Rosalind, lose their lives to an unintended overdose. That's about 100,000 last year in the last 12 months. And right now, the reason why the National Safety Council has taken this on is that about 10% of the deaths of workers at work right now are from an overdose. And in California, it's 22% of the people who are dying at work. Yes. And I appreciate that you have that kind of reaction, because it is something that I think is just not known, one, in general, and two, by employers and employees about how this is something in our workplaces. And then as a result of that, something that we need to be prepared for.
Absolutely. So many of us think this is a problem with our customers or our guests, but we actually know that employees of the restaurant and food service industries are particularly high risk. After construction, restaurants and food service has the highest overdose deaths per capita in the country. Can you speak a little bit more about whether this is an issue that affects employees, and in specific types of employers?
Yeah, and thank you for that. We look at the data, and construction is really hardest hit. And there's all kinds of reasons that we might think about regarding why certain professions are hit harder than others. As I mentioned, nearly 10% of the deaths, that's across industries, but there are some industries that are hit higher. And there's a variety of reasons for that. The kind of work that folks are doing, it might be more dangerous. It might interact with the public more. They might put themselves at risk actually because they interact with the public. The stresses of certain jobs are different. The transient nature of employees coming and going, and some folks having to work two and three jobs, all of those things add to kind of the complexity of what stresses given employees are under depending on the industry that they're in. But I will say that, you know, no matter what industry it is, and I know that the restaurant industry is hit heavy by this, not only the folks that they interact with, but their employees directly. If you think about it, 66% of the people who have a substance use disorder, and that's not the only dynamic at play here, and we'll come back to that, have jobs. They have jobs, and they are in the workforce. A recent study done in Massachusetts, which is just really, I think, helpful for us all to understand, by the Department of Public Health there, found that working age residents were 35% more likely to die of an opioid-related overdose if they had been previously injured at work. So that also, says that, you know, sometimes the action that's happening at work that may cause you then to have an MSD issue, some kind of an injury, a strain, anything that might cause you then to have to go get some kind of medication for that as part of worker comp or whatever, can sometimes be the catalyst that sets you down this path of dealing with a drug that's very dangerous. And for many, dealing with a drug that becomes addictive, and I will tell you firsthand, I was actually prescribed opioids for a back injury at work back in the like late 90s, early 2000, and I was on the drug for 2 months for pain. But because of my brain chemistry, and it has nothing to do with my personality or if I'm someone who, you know, would be likely to be addicted to drugs, it has to do with my brain chemistry, I could stop taking them on a dime. At that time, we didn't know how addictive they were. We didn't know how dangerous they were. But that has nothing to do with me. That only has to do with my story being so different because of the brain chemistry that I have. So firsthand knowledge, I understand how a work-related incident can result in something for many that then becomes life-changing and in some cases causes them to get to that overdose emergency. We also, though, need to not forget that it's not just your employees that a company might want to deal with and think about, especially in the restaurant or other industries. It's also the folks that are impacted in their lives, their family members, a friend that might be dealing either with substance use or just dealing with the fact that they took a pill from somebody for whatever reason, perhaps because they hurt themselves at work. And someone says, I've got this painkiller that I've been using, my prescription here, have one, you can get through your shift. And they hand them something that potentially was laced with fentanyl. And I have firsthand knowledge of those kinds of stories too, which means that if this can happen to someone in your life, it can happen to you in ways that we sometimes don't imagine. And the resources needed to help everybody understand the dangers and then understand what you can do about it is something that you can give your employees and then they take them home with it. They take them into their communities. And so I'll often say sometimes you're saving the lives of your employees or your customers, but other times you're saving the lives of the people that they can save when you're educating them on things like how to respond to such an emergency.
You know, one of the things that we keep hearing over and over again is, you know, we're not talking about use of naloxone for, you know, we're not always talking about it for, you know, hardened substance users. Sometimes it's the very first time, you know, that this kid who works for you tried a drug or smoke something that his coworker gave him on break.
Yeah. It's many of the stories are that, Rosalyn, and we often use the term one pill can kill. And that can be for, you know, a young adult who's, you know, experimenting or trusting another peer that they are giving him something that's safe. Or it can be, as I said before, a coworker saying, here, let me help you get through your work shift because you hurt your knee. We call those a poisoning, right? That's something where someone doesn't know what they're taking and then actually just put their life at risk. So having the ability, no matter what the source is, no matter why that person is overdosing in front of you, the fact that now naloxone, and that's the generic name for things like Narcan and other things, is over the counter, costs you about $45 for two doses. It has a 4-year shelf life, so you can store it in your first aid kits or your AED cabinets. And you have it now readily available. And to not even care or even have a second thought of what caused this person to be in front of me in this emergency, but know that I have the training and the tool now to use something that is safe and over the counter is just so empowering, one, and two, so helpful for workplaces to know that they have that skill and that they have that tool in their toolbox, like they do a tourniquet or aspirin or an AED. Soon, and I hope very soon, we'll all realize this is just one more thing we can be trained on and be ready for no matter where we are, whether it's at a football game or with our kids or in a restaurant, helping either a colleague or a customer.
I love that you brought up AEDs in that analogy, because sometimes we're hearing, isn't stocking Narcan, you know, condoning drug use? Can you talk a little more to us about that?
Yeah, and I hear that too. So, it kind of makes me question for a minute because I try to think about, you know, does having an AED in your workplace, and many companies now do, and I know most restaurants do. We have them on airplanes, every place where we think there may be that emergency of a heart attack, right? And we know that this can be the difference between person is dead, person is alive, and it's so easy now, you don't need to be trained on it, all the instructions are in the box, and you can just use it to save a life. And we don't ask ourselves, the fact that we have an AED, does that mean I'm going to endorse people having, you know, less hearty lives, right? Heart lives. It means that if there's an emergency, I'm going to do something about it, and I can. And it does not promote, you know, bad health or folks to put, you know, to not exercise or any of those things. It's just, it doesn't work that way. And it doesn't work that way by having naloxone on hand as well. If a person's going into that emergency, they didn't intend to do that. That is not their, you know, their expected outcome from whatever it is they just did, whether it was to take something to get through their work shift, or if they are struggling with a substance use. They're trying to get through their day, especially if they're at work. They're trying to do what they need to do to provide for their family, to provide for their customers. And the fact that you're there with the tools to address an emergency truly has no impact whatsoever on the action that person takes. And I hope we can dispel some of that, and really think of it just as emergency response, and to be ready for that wherever we are. We just saw in the FAA's appropriations now for aircraft, they're going to be required to carry it on aircraft. Most of the major carriers do voluntarily, but we worked hard to get some legislation that's going to require that. We're also working legislation to require it and training in all federal buildings. And we probably won't be able to get to the point where we require it for companies, because that comes with a cost, but we certainly want to encourage all companies to lean into this, especially since it is really inexpensive. The other great thing about this, for this over-the-counter drug, you cannot hurt somebody with it. If the person isn't overdosing, it will do nothing to them, because it gets into your brain and kind of separates that brain chemistry I was referring to stop the overdose. And if you're not having an overdose, it's not going to do anything. Maybe you're having a heart attack and you need to get the AED or some other emergency. But that's what's so great about, feeling comfortable that I can use this on the moment. After I get trained, I can know what the signs should be. But again, if you misdiagnose, you're not going to hurt somebody.
I would tell you that in 0 hour health, naloxone training, that's the feedback that we get the most often, how surprised people are to learn, you know, I didn't know, you know, that it's perfectly safe, whether you're overdosing or not. We hear that regularly. We're hearing some reluctance to make the first move because of legal consequences. I know NSC has done quite a bit of work in that area. What are the legal protections that employers have if they stock naloxone as part of their response-ready workplace effort?
Yeah, thank you. And there's really two things, and we already kind of addressed the first one, which is this stigma, you know, of having it on hand, and what does it say about me and my employees? And hopefully we can get our minds and our psyche past that. The other one is, do I have legal consequences? You know, if I have this here and someone's having an emergency, do I have any increased risk? All 50 states have naloxone access laws, and 49 in DC have enacted both drug overdose Good Samaritan and naloxone access laws. On our website, we have a tool that goes you state by state. And most of your customer or your partners here probably operate in most all states in the nation. But we go state by state to give you that sort of roadmap of what's where. And only Wyoming doesn't have a Good Samaritan law for drug overdoses, but it does have a naloxone access law. And we have all the resources to help you with that. In addition, we worked with a law firm that did some pro bono work for us to do a legal brief that if your first response of your CEO or whoever you're talking to is, oh, go talk to legal, you know, before we move, go talk to legal, we'd encourage you to get this legal brief. It gives them a head start to looking at this issue for any company in any industry, and we hope that can be helpful to you as well. But it's important to know what's happening in your state. Run it by your legal team. A lot of companies had to do this when they did their AEDs, very similar. You know, will we have legal responsibilities, and what about maintaining them, and you know, all of those things. This is very, very similar to that, and those protections are there as well.
It's very similar to it in so many ways, in the expiration dates, in the operating procedures, really very, very similar.
That four-year life, they just went from 3 to 4, which is great, but a lot of your AEDs and their batteries are going to have the same kind of expiration or required maintenance. And it's also, the AEDs are also kind of a neat place to put it, truthfully. We're working with the ANSI standard, the standard here in the U.S. that defines what a first aid kit should have in it. And we would love that all compliant first aid kits going forward have to have naloxone in them. So we're working that. But in the meantime, if you do have an AED, it often is alarmed so that you know that it's being used. And it is usually in a case of some sort, such that it looks a little more, you know, official, that somebody's just not going to go into it. You know, it might, as we say, get legs. So you want to put it in a place where you know where it is. Your staff knows where it is. It's perhaps behind that glass cabinet that also has your AED in it. But it's also then a great place, because that preventative maintenance that you're going to have to do to update your AED, you can also just make sure that your dates on your naloxone are current at that time as well. So it's a really nice place if you've gone down that path, not only for the stigma and legal issues, but also just for the maintenance issues. It's a nice piggyback to see if you can make it easy for you to put it in place.
And that leads to another question, which is, what does a good emergency response and preparedness program look like? What is NSC focused on in that?
Right. Well, the first step, as we've said, is to get naloxone in your workplace. Again, you can buy that off our website at a discount. You can buy it at a lot of other places. The reason we did make it available on our website is so that people can get it in bulk, because that's sometimes harder to do.
Yes.
If you want to go just to your Walgreens or your CVS on the corner store. And we also have free shipping. But get everybody trained, not only so they can use it at work, but as we've said before, they take that training with them home. And a lot of safety programs, you're always trying to keep people safe at work, but really high, mature safety programs talk to their employees about what they can do during their whole day, during their whole life, to make sure that they live their fullest life and their family members are safe. So this is just another way that you can have a safety program and an employee wellness program that goes home with them. Again, the skill sets that might be able to save a life that, you know, may never walk in your door, but certainly impacted your employees. Make sure that you catch your new hires. A lot of programs sometimes have good safety. One time we trained everybody, and then you get your new hires, and over time it attrits out, especially for industries like the Restaurant Association, which probably have a little bit more turnover than others. And the other thing we have, and you may not think of this one, but a really good program also helps your employees and your leaders recognize when someone isn't right, isn't on their game for whatever reason. And we have something called impairment training, or supervisor impairment training, which anybody could take. And it helps you recognize, is this person, you know, have fatigued, you know, and shouldn't be at the oven today? Is this person dealing with mental stress, which their head's just not in the game? Are they perhaps underneath some kind of substance use, you know, impairment right now? And it helps any person, intervene and gives them the skills to say, you know, I don't think you're on your game today. I know you. This just doesn't feel right. And back them away from the risky activity, whatever that might be, and then have someone help them, you know, get whatever resources they need. We do often see people in and around us, and we think, I should have said something. I know they weren't, you know, something looked funny there. And that intervening is hard to do, you know, because people are people. But it's another thing you could put into your sort of your implementation program to train folks on the skill sets to be able to intervene. And then finally, if that emergency happens, you don't care who it is, feel confident in your training, know where your naloxone is, and be able to just jump into action like we do for things like CPR. The other thing, though, I would say is that a lot of folks will say, well, Lorraine, you're just dealing with the emergency. Why didn't you work all the way back and make sure you never get to the emergency? And that there's a lot in our nation, that including how do you get fentanyl to stop coming into our country in the first place, and how do we help folks with mental health and all the remaining sort of stresses that are in people's lives. And having some good programs there are important too. A good safety system, understanding that physical safety and psychological safety go together, your EAP programs, making sure that you can recognize things like fatigue and stress and burnout as part of your program. And then there are EAP programs that you can add on top of sort of a generic one that really focus around substance use disorders and things like that to help with that, and things like having to do with suicide ideation. So if you really think you have a high-risk community of employees, really lean into what resources could help and make sure that you are kind of going to that the front end of this crisis so that, you know, you might be able to help someone before we get into that emergency. But it's complex, and some of it gets kind of personal and mushy. But first thing is first, just make sure that you can address the emergency that may happen and is happening in our workplaces today.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate it. For our listeners, how do they find you in NSC?
NSC.org, in our Respond Ready Workplace, is where you can find all of the opioid-related and emergency response tools that we've talked about today. But NSC.org.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's our show for today. Thanks again for taking the time to join us. Stay tuned for our next episode in your inboxes and on your podcast app of choice soon. As always, if you have any topics or questions you'd like us to cover, or if a guest we should chat with, don't hesitate to reach out to us at support@zerohourhealth.com. To learn more about us and subscribe to our twice weekly executive summary, check out zerohourhealth.com. Thanks again.